No role plays, just real. Chris and Lorenzo share 4 decades of combined experience to help you become a more effective leader.
We've never really, as a workforce, spent a lot of time on making sure we're developing good leaders.
We'll be able to share stories, experience, mistakes, failures, successes.
This is Hacking Your Leadership.
Welcome to Hacking Your Leadership. I'm Chris.
And I'm Lorenzo.
And Lorenzo, on this episode, I want to talk about onboarding.
Like bringing new people on and hiring people, huh?
Exactly that. In my consulting practice, I've worked with a lot of companies, a couple of big ones over the last year and a half. And one of the things I like to do is when I meet somebody new to an organization, is I like to talk to them about their onboarding process because I want to see what works and what doesn't work. And I noticed a huge gap between different organizations in how their onboarding process was during the pandemic. And some organizations were pleasantly surprising in terms of their onboarding process and what the new employees reported the experience was versus others. And I kind of want to kind of lay out a scenario here and tell you and kind of get your thoughts on what you think about this. If an employee is new to an organization prior to 2020, depending on how seriously the organization takes the onboarding process, they may, you know, have a person like, you know, kind of show them the ropes, kind of assign them a buddy, that kind of thing. Or there might be kind of just an assumption that, well, they'll kind of learn. They'll learn because they're sitting at a cubicle and they're next to other people and they get invites to meetings. They'll sit in meetings. They'll learn the culture because they'll just be in the room with people. It just kind of happens over time in sort of remote environment. And there's no way for that to happen unless you actually make it happen. Like, you're very intentional about it. Mm-hmm. And so I have spoken with a lot of people over the last year and a half who have said that their onboarding process during the pandemic was the best onboarding experience of their professional lives because it was the first time that somebody actually took the time to go through things with them. And they had a contact person and there were people that were very intentional about giving them the data they needed. And I thought, well, that's very interesting, but it leads me to believe that it is not an intentional process outside of an environment that says this is definitely not going to happen unless we do it. Have you seen that before, or have you noticed people kind of slip through the cracks because it's just kind of assumed that, oh, they'll kind of learn. They'll learn. They'll be here. You know, it's osmosis.
Yeah. Well, I think historically, you know, some of the organizations that I've seen do a great job with onboarding is because, like, there's a pretty clear cut process to some of the things that you mentioned. Like, there's the time that's dedicated. There's the specific things you're going to go over. There's an order in which you learn things. You get things. You spend time with people. And typically, different people. Like, I think, you know, being able to really kind of work through a culture is having to meet many individuals in the organization to reflect what the culture looks like. And I think that...
And to honestly to find those, people that you gravitate towards. Like, the more people you meet, right, the more likely you're able to find people who you can go like, all right, this is my go-to. This is my, like, we're going to get along here. I can have a beer with this person, not just work with them.
Exactly. Like, it allows you to kind of start to build your relationships and build your network as you get in there. I think some organizations where people, it kind of falls into the hands of who's really passionate about that onboarding experience, and do they bring it to life off of the paper and off of the strategy versus the organizations where you have people that are like, well, it's kind of my job, or I guess it's my turn this time, or I've been asked to do this. And so they just kind of go through, you know, what needs to get done, and they just move along. So I think what ended up happening specifically with the virtual world and onboarding was that there were, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, there were people that had this natural skill set for the virtual world, whether they were used to doing social media or they were streamers or they were, you know, like whatever it might be, like really comfortable, really enjoyed being in their home, really good at kind of, you know, building out structure and process. But had a natural tact for connecting with people in the virtual space and over virtual meetings and things like that. And I think what ended up happening was there was so much focus of, this is different. This is not like we normally do onboarding or we have in the past. We have to think about this. And that level of attention led to much better strategies, led to much better clarity in how things come across, and probably highlighted individuals that did this really, really well and allowed them to have the space to go and onboard people. So I think that everybody in the workforce, one way or another, had to figure out some of this virtual world in certain situations. But I think specifically for onboarding and bringing people on, I think the companies that spent time and attention on it probably got the biggest bang for their buck. And those that were just like, well, I guess we have to have a process, so let's figure one out, probably got the same type of experience virtually as they did physically.
Right, I agree with that. There was something, this is kind of a little tangent here, but you'll see where I'm going with this. I learned very recently that when I was growing up, you know, you're always taught that, oh, back in the days of the frontier, or the founding fathers days, you know, the average age of that people lived to was like 40 something or 30 something or 50, you know, whatever that is, right? And then you start to read stories about people that are famous living into their 80s and their 90s, and you're like, wow, they really bucked the trend. It's like, no. What really was happening was that the death rate in childbirth and in infancy was so high because of the lack of medicine that it skewed the average. It wasn't that people were like on average dying at 40. It was that there was a lot of people dying very, very young, and therefore it made the average lower. But there were still plenty of people living into their 70s and 80s and 90s, right? And so I think the same thing happened when it comes to turnover. You know, we've seen stats for years that say that the average tenure in an organization is 3 years, three and a half years. And that can imply that people are looking for jobs every 3 to 3.5 years. And no, what it actually is that there are a lot of people who are with companies a long time, and then there are a lot of people who are leaving organizations in the first 6 to 12 months. Mm-hmm. And that is skewing the average. It's this death in infancy when it comes to organizations that causes the turnover to seem higher and the retention to seem lower. And if somebody is leaving during the first 6 to 12 months, to me that says the onboarding experience was terrible. Because that's all you have to go by. It's you know, that you put your best foot forward in the interview process. You assume the organization is doing the same thing if they want you there. But if the onboarding process doesn't reflect what you thought you were going to get during the interview process, that could be a jarring experience, and it could lead people to think, all right, I need to jump ship now because I don't want to find myself hating this place 2 years, 3 years from now, and so I end up leaving. And so this is a very important thing when it comes to hiring managers, in that, you know, there are hiring managers in organizations where the trend has been to remove the people from the decision process who are actually going to be the ones leading the new hires. And what's around that is this goal of making sure that you don't have people making decisions based on their own best interests as a leader, but rather on the best interests of the organization as a whole. You get more diversity that way. You get less groupthink. There are a lot of benefits of kind of bringing people in from the outside in the hiring process. However, if your organization's hiring process is completely external like that, if you've really Googled it to the point where you don't have the person who has stake in the game making the decisions, then you actually get into a situation where someone gets to hire somebody and then wash their hands of the situation, say, well, my job is done. I've made sure that we were inclusive and diverse, and that that there was no like kind of ulterior motives here. It was a very objective hiring process. And now it's the job of the team to get this person integrated. I've done my job. And that's where this can break down. Where organizations do it well is when you have like an assigned mentor, like a person who's actually, it's your job, Lorenzo, it's your job to integrate Chris into this organization and to make sure that he does a good job or that he has a good experience onboarding. When it's a team's job to onboard a new person, it's nobody's job.
No, exactly. And I think that it's important, like I said earlier, just that ability to have somebody in that space that's passionate about it, they represent the brand well, you know, they do all types of things. Like, it's really easy to watch Undercover Boss.
Sure.
And then be like, ugh, oh my gosh. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you see these horrible behaviors of the person trying to help the CEO learn something and just giving them attitude and bad things, and they feel like they don't want to be there. But like that is actually like not in your face that way, but that comes to fruition quite a bit when you have somebody who is maybe responsible for onboarding, but isn't engaged in onboarding. Maybe they're capable of training people, but they're very dry. They're not looking for the ability to help people connect dots. They're not aware of learning styles or how to make the adjustment or what you need to do. Yet maybe they're really good at teaching you something, but teaching is very different than engaging, which is very different than like onboarding, welcoming, including. Like, these are all different things that are necessary, and I think you're spot on. Like, I think there has to be in ownership with an individual that would go on, you know, their review, that would be discussed as a means of expectations of their role, whether that means that they get an increase in compensation or that this is something that's a responsibility that, you know, that prepares them for the next role. But that type of, I think, clarity and responsibility is then what creates the right environment for onboarding, which then allows people to have not only a great hiring experience, but a great onboarding experience. And then at that point, now they are truly just simply being assessed on their ability to do the role that they have been hired to do and those types of expectations without the element of maybe not feeling welcomed, not getting the right type of training, not feeling like they've built a network out or that they have a resource when they have an issue or a problem.
Yeah, that's so funny that you say that about clarity because, you know, Gallup comes out with new data every year, and their most recent data from last August said that 1 in 5 employees reported no onboarding experience at all, and that 3 in 5 reported a less than good onboarding experience. And you know, to have no onboarding experience at all, you know, implies that I don't know how I would ever stay at a job or even know what my job was if there was no onboarding experience at all. But the ones that said that they had a great onboarding experience, the single biggest factor was the onboarding process organized and delivered in a way that where the clarity of expectations were there. Like this is, you're kind of laying out the first 30, 60, 90, and 180 days for an employee of this is what you should have done. These are the trainings you should have accomplished. This is how you should be integrated, kind of laying it out for them on a way for them to kind of look at and go, all right, am I on track to being on board? Am I on track to being where I should be? Because you want to talk about a psychological jarring experience for an employee. It's I'm not spending time on my job because what I'm worried about is, am I up to speed? I'm worried about, am I going to look like an idiot in a meeting because I'm not where I should be. And if there is a kind of a universal calendar or a thing that's been sent to me personally based on my job and my job description and the people that I work alongside of this is where I should be at every step of the way, I can gut check that every day if I need to make sure I am where I need to be. And then I can be vocal about it when I am not getting the training or the orientation or the onboarding or all of these things that should be happening. So laying it out in an objective way says that this is the expectation in advance. This happened before I was even hired. Was this expectation was put in place? Am I meeting it? Am I exceeding it? Or am I just kind of being left to fend for myself? I think that level of objectivity and clarity is obviously it's the biggest difference.
Absolutely. No, and I think it's a... It's funny because like you have to imagine to say that you have no onboarding at all. Like, well, then how do you even like sign into a system to like get your paycheck or like
right.
like so what that means is
it's not a technological onboarding, not a cultural onboarding.
Correct. What that means is that they were onboarded with the things they needed to get their job done, but at no yes. point was there somebody saying like, I'm here to make sure that you're good. I'm here to make sure you have what you need. I'm here to make sure like it was a very, very specific and yeah, transactional type of an experience for somebody. And that's probably why it feels that way. And I think that a lot of organizations, based upon the industry, probably have a lot of that approach anyway, especially if you think about like very specific industries where maybe somebody is educated or they have specific, you know, like I think about like a developer or an engineer or there's things that you do. And it's like you've got the education, you've gone through the interview process, you can do this type of work. And then day one is like, hey, everybody, meet Chris. Chris is our new developer, engineer, whatever the case is. He's working today. This is going to sit over here. You know, hi, Chris. Great. Okay, Chris, here's your desk, right? And your new project manager will connect with you in regards to the work that you're doing. Have a great day. And it's like, yeah. You know, but what are we doing with that? And how are we considering the longer term effect? How are we considering that fact that you said earlier, which is, you know, greatly reducing that turnover rate in the first 6 months to year. And so much of that, I think, has to do with not the work itself, but more than likely, like how people feel they're being treated, how they feel they're being welcomed, how, you know, what resources they have and who do they talk to. Like so much of the social people element of that, I think, is probably behind those types of decisions to say, I worked hard, I got this job, I'm here now, and I don't want to be here. So much of that, I think, is really down to the people piece. And if strategized and implemented correctly, you can go through a lot of that and make sure that that's not a factor in early on, you know, voluntary, you know, quitting of the job.
Right. There's something very impactful from a negative standpoint around seeing a lack of excitement among the people that you are going to be working alongside, people who you probably didn't spend a lot of time with during the interview process, right? So you met your hiring manager, you had several interviews, likely that they were excited about, they were doing a job, like their job was to hire you. And so they were engaging in their job because it was their job. Is it the job of me as a contributor in an organization? Is it my job to onboard a teammate? Well, if it is, if that's part of my job description, then I'm likely going to do it better than if it's just assumed that, oh, hey, you know what? One of the things that you have to do while you're here is onboard new employees, make them feel welcome. It's like, okay, there was no process around the job description piece of that is my job to onboard new employees. Therefore, it's going to be an inconsistent experience on whoever the person is, and they're going to get the impression that the work that I'm putting into their onboarding was an afterthought because my primary responsibility is whatever my day job is. That's my job. That's my day job. And so if instead, when a person is introduced to the new team, you're saying, all right, Chris, this is Lorenzo. He's going to be your mentor for this week. And look over there. That's Jennifer over there. She's going to be your mentor the following week over there. Jennifer, raise your. Oh yes. Okay. So what you're going to do is you're going to have the last hour of every day is going to be scheduled to be sitting with Lorenzo, and you're going to be working on what you went over, what you need, what questions you might have. That's the last hour of every day. And now Lorenzo, because that's part of your job, that's your actual last hour of your day. You know that's your job. Now you're engaged in that and not thinking about the other work that you should be doing or couldn't be doing that is your job. That's taken off of your plate because now your job is to make sure that Chris is onboarded well and integrated into the culture. And again, it's that very intentional way of saying that it is important that a new employee feels like they felt when they left the interview process. It's mm-hmm. important that when they walked out of there excited, thinking, you know what, this might be the next thing for me. I'm excited about this company. I think I'm going to accept the job offer. That level of passion and excitement, if that drops by even a little bit during the first week or first 2 weeks, then you've not done a good job as an organization in terms of the culture around your onboarding. They need to feel just as energized during that process as they did during the interview process, or you're not putting enough kind of intentional thought into this.
Absolutely. And with that, it brings us to this episode's 1 Minute Hack. But first, a few words from our sponsors.
The 1 Minute Hack.
All right, this episode's 1 Minute Hack is around intentional onboarding. There are two parts to this. One is begin talking to your team right away in aggregate around that part of their job is on the onboarding process of new employees for that team. This is before you hire a person. Start now. Start talking about the fact that when a new employee starts, these are the things they're going to need in order to get integrated, up to speed. Create a plan that looks at 30, 60, 90, and 180 days for onboarding that new employee, and talk to the team about their responsibilities around it immediately. And then when an actual employee gets hired, that talk goes from the aggregate of talking to the team to actually assigning it to an individual or to multiple individuals on a timeline. Today, this is your responsibility. You're going to meet with this person, and it's very intentional and it's laid out. It's scheduled time. That scheduled time will make sure that any new employees who don't necessarily feel comfortable reaching out or they don't know who to reach out to, that it's almost mandatory that we're going to sit and we're going to talk. And if there's no questions and they're feeling like it's going well, then it's a time for that person to just get to know another individual with the organization and possibly having it be a jumping off point for a personal relationship that could lead to them feeling more integrated into the culture of the organization to begin with. So it's very intentional. Talk about it in aggregate with your team and then assign it to individual people on a daily basis when it comes to onboarding new employees.
Yeah, I think it's a great 1 minute hack. And again, just to underscore just the idea of having intentionality and a structure and a purpose of making sure that you have a plan. And the more time and attention you put into that plan, I think the better output you have in regards to how people feel about onboarding with an organization.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And lastly, don't underestimate the importance of some type of a welcome package, like a care package. Don't half-ass this. This isn't just like, oh, here's your Post-its that are branded with the company logo. It has to be something better than that. You know, something that you can put into it to say to a person, we see the importance of you being here and we're taking this seriously. This isn't just something that is like a box we're checking. We're being intentional about it from the first moment you sit down, because that will hold us accountable to being intentional about it as you go through the process.
Absolutely. And with that, it brings us to the end of this episode. This is Hacking Your Leadership. I'm Lorenzo.
And I'm Chris.
And we'll talk to you all next time.